All right, so ladies and gentlemen, welcome to a very special episode of Men's Truth. We want to thank all the listeners. We are at 3,000 plays, so we are grateful for all the support. And I'm very sure after this topic, we're probably going to reach 5,000. Because today we're going to be talking about what men need to know about sex. And with us, we have a very special, very honest, and also very professional guest, Dr. Karen Carpenter, clinical sexologist, psychologist, creator, the host of Love and Sex. Dr. Carpenter, how are you?
I am fine, Steph. I'm not sure I can live up to all those things, but I'll try.
And as usual, I have with me my brethren, my colleagues, Mr. Michael Natu, the poet, the journalist. Also with me, I have financial and sales coach, entrepreneur, Mr. Karim Ellis. So Doc, fun fact, I found out today that to us as men, the most important parts of a woman's body was actually named after a man, the ever elusive G-spot and also the fallopian tubes. I did not know that.
And they're named after these men because just like Columbus, they encountered these things. They didn't discover it. The law was there. But they encountered it. Yeah?
And decided.
We speak about Columbus discovering America. We speak about the Columbus encounter. So, yes, the G-spot encounter and the F-spot encounter.
So I guess much like everything with sex, we as men, we believe that we own and we possess and we place our entire names on these things.
Absolutely. And I think there is a sense in which, and I mean, it's not to blame entirely on present-day men, because there was a time when women were not thought to have a sexuality.
Say that again. Women were not thought to have sexuality?
Absolutely not. Women were just large children. Women were free from any sexual desire. Women were naturally frigid. Women were naturally, you know, childlike. They were naive. And whenever a man entered the room with an erection, these women naturally had desire. But if a man left the room with his erection, a woman's desire went away. Mm-hmm. Yes. And that's a different theory that we need to.
I am shocked. Like because I can't, as you said, present day men. Because in this day and age, I mean, it's I can't even think about. Yeah.
Before Alfred Kinsey and Masters and Johnson, it was not known that women could have an orgasm on their own, and it was thought that same sex relations between women were sort of deformed type of sex. And a woman, as Freud said, who couldn't have a vaginal orgasm, this mythical vaginal orgasm, was simply not having a mature orgasm. In other words, if a man penetrated a woman, then it must mean that she ought to have an orgasm. And men today still think that.
Yeah, you know, I'm not well married, and I've seen a lot of classes that you learn about, you know, all the different orgasms that women can have. Some I won't venture into, but, you know, the female body is pretty wonderful. it's pretty interesting.
I have a question, though. Why is that such a prevailing perception among men, especially out here, and I could speak specifically to Jamaica? There seems to be this idea that, you know, men are naturally gifted at sex. And if a woman is not able to orgasm, you know, my man, then something is wrong with her and not necessarily associated with a man. Why is that?
Yes. Well, let me say that I'm going to answer it in a roundabout way. And I'm going to begin by saying that men look for their validation in other men. Yes? Mm. But men don't have vaginal cavities, men don't have clitorises, men don't have female body parts. So if you're looking at your brethren for validation of how good a sex partner you are, then that's somewhat strange because saying to him, "Why am I wicked in bed, you know?" But you're not saying to her, "Am I wicked in bed?"
Right. Okay?
So men use other men as a measure of virility, validity, masculinity. But the persons they're having the sex with, for the most part, are women. But they never actually ask women for a score sheet. In fact, what most men will do after an episode of sex is to say to the woman, "Baby, did you love that?"
I like that.
That's the question. That's the question. That's an imperative. You're telling her, "You did love that." You're not asking her. You didn't say, "How you feel about that? You all right? What does all right mean? Where? You want part of my body?"
Did that touch the right spot, or did that hurt? Where did you?
Well, the thing is, you don't even need to supply the words if we're asking the woman. The woman can supply all the words for you,
right,
if you're genuinely curious. If you're genuinely an explorer and you want to know what was it like, because since men don't have a vagina or a vaginal canal and they don't have a clitoris, it might be good to ask the owner of the clitoris what was it like. And since women don't have a penis and they don't have scrotum, it might be interesting to ask the man what was it like to be a penis in this experience.
But, you know, I think we're very bored, you know. We just have that one shaft there that it's a lot complicated. But I do agree, because before, in my earlier, you know, the earlier stage, it was just going there and seeing how much pain you can cause or how much sounds you can make her make. We're just being candid. But you know, after really, you know, going and doing my research and, you know, doing some classes and all of that and learning the female organ.
Anatomy.
Anatomy and, you know, really looking at the different spots and where, what teases her. And I mean, different women have different spots, you know, around that G-spot area, around the clitoris, what's sensitive, what's not. And, you know, you go there and you take your time, you find out that the sexual experience is way much more pleasurable for even you. It's not so much again you coming. Like, my pleasure now, I've become someone that loves to please. So my pleasure now isn't so much me coming. As a matter of fact, I couldn't even care if I come anymore. It's just knowing that I can have that woman's body doing a whole bunch of stuff.
So what has happened is that you've moved from being a glutton, eat everything on the plate, to being a king, where you become a specialist and a technician. And a technician can deliver pleasure in numerous ways, but satisfaction is a very different thing from pleasure.
Oh.
And satisfaction is emotional.
Mm-hmm.
Satisfaction is internal, and it's specific to that particular woman.
Mm-hmm.
So satisfaction means that a woman, when she is done, she feels satiated, she feels full, she feels ready for the best piece of work she could do in the day. She feels energized, her brain has fully reloaded, and she's ready to go.
How would we make that distinction then? And is it a sexual thing for a woman to be satisfied in that case, or is it a combination of, you know, having like an emotional attachment then?
Oh, there are many casual encounters that leave women much more satisfied than a prolonged bad experience. Mm-hmm. And I believe that bad sex is an oxymoron. An oxymoron is when you put two things together that don't belong together.
Right.
Bad and sex don't belong together. If you're having bad and sex together, you should stop. Because sex is good and good sex is better. So the satisfaction that we speak about is feeling fulfilled. Whatever desire you had at that moment was fulfilled. And that's not about length of time. That's not about the person's size. It's not about any of those things. It's that in this moment I feel for chocolate or macadamia nuts, any of the 16 flavors of Baskin Robbins, and I got exactly what I wanted. And so I'm satisfied.
From your clients and from your experiences, what are some of the common misconceptions that men have about their women, their partners?
Well, to begin with, I think your colleague just said it right now. one of the common misconceptions, when he was young, he used to thrust us hard and agony, agony, agony. Yes? And that was not the answer. So one of the common misconceptions that Jamaican men have, and that's because we're undereducated when it comes to sex. We do not have enough biology lessons. We don't have enough information about how the body works. The misconception is if you deliver the agony, if you dagger the woman to death, then she must respond with moaning and groaning, and that moaning could be pain. It could be discomfort, or she become a technician and she makes the kinds of sounds that make you come.
Wow.
Because she wants it done. Mm-hmm. Because she wants the pain to be over.
I've had experiences where, you know, women tell me explicitly that they want to use pain. Like,
okay. Yeah, I think sometimes the idea of a thing is better than the thing itself.
Mm-hmm.
So the idea, the fantasy of discomfort, notice I'm using two different words. The fantasy of discomfort can sometimes be erotic. But pain is never pleasurable unless the person is into BDSM or some other type of pleasure. But on average, most women will want to experience pleasure. So the common misconception is that going harder, going deeper is better for the woman. But what men fail to recognize is that the vaginal canal is a birth canal. And therefore, it is designed for you to go deeper in order to fertilize an egg.
Mm-hmm.
That's the reason why you feel the need to thrust. Because when you deposit your sperm far into the vaginal canal, that woman has a higher chance of getting pregnant. And pregnancy and pleasure have nothing to do with each other. Pleasure, that's 7 out of 10 women. If you have 10 women on a bus, 7 of those 10 women need to have clitoral stimulation at the right time in order to achieve an orgasm, because all orgasms are in the clitoris, even if it starts off from stimulation in the vaginal canal. Yeah, even before we get to the clitoral stimulation, while I'm very interested in that, men can also concentrate on the first thirds. The first thirds in a woman's vaginal canal is where she has the most sensitive nerve endings. The deeper you go, the less sensation she feels. Think of a light bulb, gentlemen. When you screw a light bulb in, it has a thing that we call in Jamaica, rougou rougou. In French, the word is called rouget. And rougou rougou comes from the French word rouget, which means ripples or roughness. So as you screw the light bulb in, that part that screws in, it's the same thing with the vaginal canal. They're about 2 to 3 inches at the entrance, which has rougou rougou, and that's where the sensation is. So the sensation the woman receives is from you pulling out and pushing in, but not from the deep thrusting. So every time you pull out and in, you give her pleasure in that first thirds. Sometimes you can tease the first thirds to arrive at greater pleasure. And remember, the G-spot is only 2 inches into that canal. So all of that pleasure is compacted in the first thirds and the clitoris.
I'm thinking notes.
Okay. In other words, you don't need a huge number to please a woman.
They say you need 3 inches, but visually, we don't necessarily want you to see 3 inches. And while we may not feel all of what enters, we're certainly pleased psychologically by the idea of an adequate member.
Wow.
But most women are not interested in a large penis. Most women are concerned that they'll be hurt by a large penis. And a woman who is small in size but desires a large penis is often into BDSM and some kind of self-punishment.
So a lot of these fears and doubts and embarrassment that men share, it's really among us, it's just us.
And that's what I keep saying, that men compare themselves with other men.
Mm-hmm.
They don't ask women. The average penis size is 6.5 to 7 inches. And if we start at 5.5 inches and go up to 7 is more than adequate. If you take your toothpaste tube and put it on the cup, on the top, let it stand up on the top, you notice that toothpaste is now phallic. So the average penis measures the same size as a tube of toothpaste. It's not an accident that they're making the toothpaste tube 5.5 to 7 inches.
Hello, I
do all that. So every time you brush your teeth, you're holding on to your member.
No, because we all
know that both men and women self-pleasure. And so men tend to be very proud of their penises regardless of what they look like.
True.
So that toothpaste represents for them their prowess.
I'm dying here because for no reason at all I have the toothpaste tube in my hand. And I'm not even consciously aware of it sometimes.
Why do you measure up nothing?
Yeah, he's measuring up, and I would say that waiting on the toothpaste manufacturer to come out with a toothpaste that sprays when you squeeze it.
Oh my God.
That will sell endlessly because men enjoy seeing themselves come.
Essentially, we are having sex with ourselves in our own mind.
Constantly. And men will tell women, I'm going to have sex with you, and here's what I'm going to do. I'm going to do this, and I'm going to do that, and I'm going to do the other. The poor woman does not want any of those things. But what is she to do? You're telling a fairy tale and she's just listening like Hansel and Gretel.
But why is it not something that is as talked about as it should be? You know, especially between a man and a woman.
Okay, so it's not common knowledge among women. It's common dissatisfaction among women. So there are many women who are dissatisfied with their sex lives. But they are not analyzing, nor are they aware of their own anatomy. So I think men and women in Jamaica are not well educated about how their bodies work sexually. So they both go into it with this misconception. I hear so many women talking about him giving me an orgasm and she giving me an orgasm. And I'm saying, nobody gives you an orgasm. You've got built-in orgasms. You come to the situation with your orgasms. And how many of them you wish to release is up to you. So what would you like to do?
I'm considering another thing because I've encountered women who are firmly rooted in the belief that they cannot have an orgasm. And is there root to that, you know, from a biological perspective?
Unless it's damage to the clitoris, the vaginal canal, the tissue. Every woman can have an orgasm. And there are many, as somebody said, there were many types of orgasms that women have. I always encourage my clients to come to me and say that they're anorgasmic. That means not having an orgasm. And when a woman says to you, you ask her, have you ever had an orgasm? And she says, I'm not sure. She's never had one. So when a woman comes to me and she's anorgasmic, one of the things I encourage her to do is to get an orgasm diary. Because what I'm going to help her to experience and understand about her body is how many different types of orgasms she can have and where they're located and how she can trigger them. Because the notion that this man is supposed to come with a toolkit to give you an orgasm is absolutely ridiculous. The sex toy industry would not be booming a man to give an orgasm.
I was just about to comment on that because I was about to tell you that I actually... I have a business, a sex type business, and that's when I actually decided, you know, really venture into this pleasing woman thing, because I'd sell toys, and the feedback I'd get was like, you know, this toy had me squirting, I came so many times, and I'm like, okay, what is it that toy is doing that the man isn't doing? So, you know, I took some time, and I researched these toys, where they're actually penetrating and targeting and all of that. And, you know, that's how my journey started, pretty much.
And I'm curious to know, were the toys that were causing women to experience this new thing?
Not in terms.
Were they penetrating?
No, they were mostly clitoral stimulation toys.
Absolutely. And anal, I was telling somebody just today, anal pleasure, anal exploration is different from anal insertion. Not everybody wants to be inserted anally. Not everybody is eroticized by the thought because they think about the biological and hygiene issues.
And cultural.
And they don't do enemas and culture and religion. Mm-hmm. Yes, and think about those things. But the clitoral stimulation to mention is vitally important to a woman. It's important to a woman's pleasure. And clitoral stimulation is not attack the clitoris. What men have a very hard time, so I gave you a toothpaste tube that now you're allergic to. And you'll have to sanitize your hands before you touch it. But I'm going to make it worse. Clitoris is actually a small penis. That little P-shaped organ has 80,000 nerve endings. And your penis has 40,000. So how much more powerful is a woman's clitoral orgasm than a man's penile orgasm? But we don't receive them often enough. Because either the man attacks the clitoris as if it is some kind of enemy that he has to defeat. Or he ignores it entirely, and it's an afterthought. It's like, all right, I'll finish here. Clitoral stimulation.
Yeah.
But he doesn't engage the clitoris in the process of sex, the sex act, lovemaking, whatever you want to call it. And even if it's a quickie, it doesn't mean that you can't engage the sensors, the feet of the clitoris. Because the feet go deep down into the lining of the vaginal canal.
What is it about, dare I say, Caribbean cultures that make men feel like they are supposed to know everything and make women feel dirty for enjoying sex too much?
Well, I think we're bringing a European culture to bear, actually. Not a Caribbean, Afro-Caribbean culture, but a 15th century. Late 15th century, early 16th century, Victorian culture, where tables were covered, where Victoria, the queen at the time, her husband had died young. She was very much in love with him, and she went into mourning after his death. And after his death, she wore black for the rest of her reign. She was also the longest reigning monarch, with the exception of the current queen, who seems to be about to break her record. She reigned for 80 years. So for 80 years, Britain went into a form of sexual mourning. And the tabletops were covered and the feet were covered, the legs were covered. She wore black and white lace around her neck and her shirts went all the way up to her chin. And she refused to rule the parliament except from a distance because she mourned the loss of her early love all her life. That is what we inherited.
Wow.
That is when enslavement came to the Caribbean. So we've been stuck in a time war for a very long time, and then we've been Christianized, been thoroughly removed from any kind of Afrocentric eroticism, Protestantized, and we've been told that eroticism is bad and it's wrong. So this is not an African retention. This is a European retention that tells us that we're bad if we feel erotic. And so what is very natural to us is also taboo to us. And might I add, we're not taught African history in school. So we have no knowledge of what an African household looks like, what the Gold Coast households look like, or that Africa is a continent and not a country, with 54 countries, and that there are differences between these countries. But certainly tribal relations and polyamorous relations are different in the continent than they are in Europe.
And you know, it's so interesting because even when we go into like pornography and how the black body is eroticized and objectified, it's like, yes, anything African is dirty, but it's something to be used for secret pleasure. And then we go back to this this idea of being a prude in public.
Yeah, the sanitized whiteness of sex. So the black body is supposed to be that dirty, dark secret that you keep. And Professor Cornel West speaks about it as black erotic bodies, as a stanky stank of life. You know, the white, and I'm not somebody who uses terms like white and black, but if we're using them with a consciousness here of what we mean, that the white man sees no pleasure in the black woman because that's where he can be his most animal, his most visceral, his most innate, his most primordial. Yeah? And even the black man sees it in the black woman. What is an object? How do you, in your own mind, turn yourself on? When you are pleasuring women, how do you turn yourself on? By watching the woman's pleasure, by getting biofeedback, by watching her body rise.
By looking at yourself in the mirror.
All of these erotic pleasures are also intellectual pleasures, and that's what I'm saying. That the intellect comes alive when it is used for the purpose of experiencing pleasure that brings us into our whole selves.
Mm-hmm.
We're not either religious or erotic, we're both.
Yes.
We're not either spiritual or erotic and intellectual, we're all three.
We're all three.
We're fully human, you have to know what you look like in your erotic space. How do I turn myself on? It's a big question.
Well, you know, we've never really quite approached that topic from that perspective. It's always about, you know, how does this person turn me on in our heart, you know? Like,
and that's where we look to the agency. If you need someone to do it for you, if you want somebody to do for you what you're not willing to do for yourself, you have a responsibility. Your self-esteem is poor.
Mm-hmm.
Because part of self-esteem is self-responsibility and living consciously. So you can't escape that choice. And as an existential feminist, I can't escape the choices that I make. And I don't encourage anyone else to escape those choices. You can't own yourself if somebody else owns you. And when it owns your orgasms, that's a very powerful tool. Why would you allow someone to own the thing that is most erotic about you? We were enslaved as a people when we were brought here. We were kidnapped and brought here to serve in a situation that we did not agree to. There was no consent. And consent is such a big thing today in 2020. And we're still sexually enslaved and not consenting to the things that are done to our bodies.
You're right, Doc. Like, a lot of times, the feedback of the woman doesn't really matter to us once we feel like we've done like a good job.
The feedback of the next man, which is so ridiculous. But I tell you what, if you think about, so for instance, when people say, I love you, ask them, what do you mean when you say you love me?
Mm-hmm.
M. Scott Peck defines love as the willingness to experience, the willingness to experience the growth of yourself, so first yourself, and another person.
Wow.
So the willingness to extend yourself, to stretch yourself, to grow yourself for your own personal development, and then for another. So just like when you're traveling and they say, put on your mask first, if the air pressure goes on, the mask come down, put the oxygen on your face first, and then on the child beside you. And we have to do that more often.
Doc, I'm right now I'm not even sure if I know how to blink properly because everything I could develop, I'm questioning everything.
Well, I wouldn't be so broad brush and say everything, but let me say something. The fact that we're having this conversation at all with you gentlemen is a sign of evolution. None of us are born knowing this. All of us come to it at some point in our lives. And to the extent that we wake up to our own power at some point in our lives means that we can grow from point A to point B. I decided long ago that nobody had power over my own person except myself. I made some decisions very early in life because I recognized very early in life that I was an existential feminist. but an existential feminist means that I have to choose, and every day I have to choose how I will make my life better. So we all wake up at some point. At some point we break out of the chrysalis, and we wake up, and then we have a choice.
How do we break out of those things when we are constantly incentivized to continue those behaviors?
Well, let me suggest something to you, because first of all, I don't think you gentlemen here in this conversation, even the initiative to have the conversation, for me, it is so beautiful, it is so empowering of the three of you, that I would never suggest that you're in any kind of negative space. We all are in a self-actualizing space. I'm not done with it yet. I've not arrived yet. And so your journey can be even more powerful because you're getting the awakening at times when you are young enough to make good of it.
Yeah.
Not everybody's a leader. There are the shadows on the wall in the cave, and there are some who will stay in the cave and wonder what if the shadows are ghosts or demons, or if the shadows are going to gobble them up. And then there'll be others who say, no, the shadows are not demons. And then there'll be a third set who will walk out of the cave and say, there's nothing to fear outside the cave. All of us are not born for the same purpose. Yeah?
True.
And if you can recognize that, to me, it's an amazing and beautiful thing that you gentlemen are having this kind of discussion at this stage in your life, because it gives me hope. It gives me hope that you will influence others and ask them to be reflective, to think. Women have to encourage you to say, a man who can in private listen and hear and feel and be sensitive, we need to give him a space to be sensitive in public.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah? When he says it in public, somebody like yourself has to stand up and say, no, something not true, you know. Not true, you know, because we just feel away the last week. Instead of saying, oh, you can't move. Who can't I'm on you?
Yeah.
Yeah? Because we're embarrassed. We go for the crowd appeal and we look around at the crowd to see if they ready or we say.
For a lot of men, there is this, as you spoke about this space, a lot of men are afraid to ask the woman, you know, about her sexual experience, because they feel it inherently means they are not good enough. Right? And so yeah. I think we need to equip each other and other men to know that, as you said, we are all in an actualization process, right?
Yes.
You are not born knowing everything, and you need to be comfortable enough and secure in your masculinity or your personhood enough to know that if a woman says, well, this was this and it could have been done better, that it doesn't mean you need to throw your whole self away.
And I tell you something else. I think a very small percentage of men, young or older, in between, walk away from an unsatisfactory sex experience with a woman, thinking that they've satisfied her. But when the man says to his brethren, they're walking to work, they're walking to the football field, or they're just not playing football, or whatever, and I'm saying, why? You know, I'm thinking something. Somebody said to me, big up, Patsy. Boy, you know, I'm thinking something. Patsy, not really, I feel good. One of the things I encourage men to say is, why you say so?
Wow.
Men don't probe enough. Men say, why? I feel business. That's not my business, you know, I'm in a warm. Why am I not passing on nobody's business, you know? The man and the woman has them to deal with that.
Very true.
We need to follow up with the next person. Why is that so? And then he can stop and he can say, oh, he's listening.
Yeah.
It's like last time we do a thing, you know, we just see how she just quail up and she just go on and this man, she get up and she have cream down the plate, the man. No, so she's not best pleased, you know, me. No, so she never, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And he probably won't finish that sentence because he's not going to say she never come.
Right.
So you can give him room. Space is not something that's created out there by strangers.
Mm-hmm.
Space is when each of us says to the other one, where is the sofa?
Mm-hmm.
Where is
that's what space is. Yes.
And I think one of our biggest problems as men also in the sexual space with women is that we don't take the time to, you know, let a woman really climax, because, you know, they tend to take longer than us, and we really We're just in and out. We can't really bother with the language. If we really know what we're doing, it can actually be a lot shorter than we can.
There you go.
Exactly. I said it in the podcast, a couple of podcasts before, that sex actually starts way before the intercourse.
Oh, gosh. You know, they said rules for having sex. They start foreplay immediately after the last orgasm. Why? Because they talk about how good the sex was the last time.
Exactly.
And sex is in the mind, not in the body. The mind is the executive organ of the body. Everything else in the body follows the mind. So if you have it for your mind, say this man of a please, and you're going to listen, and say how she please, then your executive organ is going to tell your other organ, say, must just cease, second, and I'm telling you to that, and that you want. Yeah? Because a woman wants a quickie just as much as a man. A woman wants a longie just as much as a man. And guess what, guys? Sex takes about 7 minutes to 15 minutes. It's not that long. It's the brain fooling you by the chemicals it dispenses. The brain is a pharmacy. And it dispenses chemicals that makes you think, whoa, this is really long.
So even the idea of the long distance tula is all a myth in a man's mind?
Well, let me put it to you. There are men who delay their ejaculation longer than others.
Mm-hmm.
But those men are trying to please a woman. It's because it is natural for them to do so. They have trained their bodies. And when we meet the man, there is a condition, a sexual condition, called a retarded or delayed ejaculation. And when you don't have that ejaculation within the time that the woman is being pleasured, she begins to feel insecure because then she thinks foolishly, why am I never give an ejaculation? I never give an orgasm? Surely I'm patsy.
Poor patsy. Yeah, I've experienced that.
It's a very disaffirming thing if it happens over and over.
Mm-hmm.
So you're trying to please a woman, but after 2 or 3 times, she's like, whoa, what's
something
going on?
She starts to internalize.
Yeah, she doesn't feel good about that.
I think that's where a lot of it. I think the communication, I think, is a massive topic in everything. Because if even sex, if there's no communication, you know, then you have a major problem. In her mind, she doesn't know that you're here trying to delay your pleasure. So you can pleasure her. And in her mind, she's wondering, okay, I'm not pleasing him.
And guess what? Sometimes a woman wants a quickie. Sometimes she wants to feel the power of a quickie. Sometimes she doesn't want the bedroom scene. Sometimes she doesn't want all of the things that you usually do. And she wishes you to approach her the way you used to approach her when you just knew her and you were hot and heavy for her. Yeah. So she's not always wanting that prolonged sex. Sometimes she doesn't want to come. Sometimes she just wants the pleasure of the proximity of the body being close together.
Listen, I think that the thing that stands out to me most about that just now is the idea that sometimes the woman doesn't want to come.
But a lot of women finish off the job for themselves after the man has left. Sometimes a woman doesn't mind that you leave. It's not sad. What's sad is that she's not saying it to you.
This is where the cycle continues because we leave with a false sense of achievement and we go there and we feel like, all right, I just put in some serious work and she's laid out flat on the bed. We are going to continue doing the same thing we did to the next woman,
Can I say something to you? The emotional reward for the woman is greater than the risk of communicating that to you. The emotional reward of having to come back to be the best tula, to be a long distance runner, the time of it long is great. But that is life. The grease good relations is hypocrisy.
When is the right time to start having these conversations? Like even both sides of her, when is the right time to start having these conversations?
Never have these conversations in bed. That's rule number one. And I was speaking to Seth before we got online, and I said the ABCs of sex. So A, ask questions. B, be attentive. And C, the clitoris. Pay attention to it. We ask these questions before we get into the bedroom. Most of us, male and female, have sex with somebody who reflects our self-esteem at the time. I'm going to say it again. Most men and women have sex with someone who reflects their self-esteem at the time. If our self-esteem is poor on Monday, we're going to choose an easy lay. If our self-esteem needs boosting on Tuesday, we're going to choose a pair. Because since the pair is desired by everybody, if the pair desires me, I must do something special. If our self-esteem is healthy on Wednesday, and we're loving ourselves, we're going to choose somebody that we can love back. So each time we encounter sex with whomever and whatever number of people we encounter it with, we are reflecting our self-esteem. That's the first thing I have to say.
Yeah.
The best judge of a person's self-esteem is their sexual partner.
Yeah.
And the reason relationships break up is when you look at the other person and they don't reflect your self-esteem. You no longer feel attracted to them because you no longer feel attracted to yourself. Mm-hmm. You no longer desire yourself because you're in a situation that does not reflect your self-worth. And you say, this is not what I'm worth. Therefore, I no longer am attracted to you. So that's rule number one. Do not curse the other person. All relationships are about ourselves. So if you are having sex with someone who you think is a deadass, or a whatever, or a player, or whatever, or a cheater, that's because your self-esteem is in that same condition. Get a mirror. Look at yourself and assess your self-esteem. And if you're not engaging sexually with someone who reflects your self-esteem, help them to grow or grow and move along. That's the first thing. Romantic relationships are not for children. So my advice is, if you want to be a child sexually for the rest of your life, you can have sex with anybody. If you want to grow up and be an adult, you're going to have sex with people who reflect your self-esteem and stop pointing the finger. This relationship is about you. It's not about the other person.
Doc, wow. Like, I am blown away. Really blown away. And it just goes to show that there's always more space to learn. And there's always more that you can learn. And I think those tips, those ABCs, and looking and going after people that don't necessarily match our self-esteem, it is, there are so many things that we have to work on. But as you said, the fact that we have this forum, it's the beginning of the evolution.
I think you guys are awesome for having this forum. You are some grown men having this forum.
And we are going, this is the beginning, and we're going to call on you again for some other things we can't figure out on our own. When, to remind us again, when is the Love and Sex on Facebook Watch?
Love and Sex is on Facebook Watch. It's on Love and Sex with Dr. Karen Carpenter, and it starts at 9 o'clock on a Tuesday. And we have a podcast for the first half hour, and then we get into a discussion with our guests about that podcast. And I think coming up, we're looking at the kinds of love. How do you know when you're in the right love relationship?
Mm.
So that's an interesting one. But you guys are doing an awesome job. And we need to be engaging with adults when we engage sexually. And I mean, my congratulations to the job that you're doing. We need men talking to men about relationships. So big up yourselves.
Thank you so much, Dr. Carpenter. Michael, Karim, I know we have a lot to marinate on, and for others like ourselves who are going to be listening to this, take the time to listen to it. Listen to it by yourself. Listen to it with your partner. And hopefully we can break down some walls, some communicative walls, break down some barriers so that we can all have healthy relationships. And sex, not bad sex, sex.